Managing AML. I am Dr. Davar. We are pleased to present highlights in acute myeloid leukemia from the 2018 ASCO Annual Meeting in Chicago. The 2018 ASCO Annual Meeting in Chicago had a lot of new updates in acute myeloid leukemia, including changes to frontline therapy in elderly acute myeloid leukemia, as well as new targeted therapies that are now emerging and will hopefully be on the market in the next few months. I'm going to touch upon some of these new entities, as well as how we are incorporating these into our clinical practice, both at my institution, which is MD Anderson, but also I think more broadly in the community and academic settings in the United States. I think one of the major developments in acute myeloid leukemia has been an agent called venetoclax. Venetoclax is a BCL2 inhibitor. The BCL2 pathway is a major anti-apoptotic pathway. And so by blocking BCL2, we are promoting apoptosis or cell death. This is the basic mechanism of action of the venetoclax. The venetoclax was initially studied as a single agent in relapsed refractory myeloid leukemia, and it actually showed a very modest response rate of 19%. And this was published in Cancer Discovery by my colleague, Dr. Marina Konopleva, last year. Then the study was changed, and we did a frontline study where we combined azacitidine or decitabine. Both of these are standard hypomethylating agents used in frontline treatment in acute myeloid leukemia with venetoclax. And when we did the combination, we saw a tremendous synergy when the two agents were given together. So the combination of azacitidine or decitabine with venetoclax is now producing overall response rates of 75%. This is three times higher than expected response rates with azacitidine or decitabine alone, where we expect response rates in the range of 15 to 25% in frontline elderly AML patients. In addition to the response rates, the median survival is very encouraging at 18 months, which is again double the median survival we would get with azacitidine or decitabine alone. And the three-year survival now is 45%. So this is a major breakthrough. For the first time, we're able to tell our elderly acute myeloid leukemia patients, these are the patients we see in clinic who are 65 years of age and above, not fit for standard induction chemotherapy, often have adverse risk cytogenetics or molecular features. And we saw that with this combination of azacitidine and venetoclax, now in almost 200 patients treated worldwide in this large phase II study, we have almost a 50% chance of offering them 2.5 to 3 year and beyond survival, which is very, very important because historically we always projected the long-term survival for elderly AML at between 10 and 15%. What was more interesting from this study that was presented at the ASCO meeting by Dr. DiNardo, one of my colleagues, was that the responses seem to be maintained across all molecular and cytogenetic subsets. So even people who had adverse cytogenetics as well as adverse mutations such as TP53 seem to have 60 to 70% complete responses or complete responses with insufficient count recovery, which is very, very encouraging. Now, when we look at the duration of response and overall survival, we do unfortunately see that the people who have adverse cytogenetics and TP53 mutation continue to have a decrease in their median overall survival, with median overall survival of 8 to 9 months, as opposed to 18 months for the people who do not have these adverse features. So I think although these data are very encouraging and getting to 45 to 50% survival in the elderly unfit population at 2.5 to 3 years time point is fantastic, we still have a lot of work to do. Patients with TP53 adverse cytogenetics still continue to have poor survival. And we're also seeing that at 2.5, 3 years, more than 50% of people are losing response or not alive. So we now are looking at new combinations that will further improve on the azacitidine venetoclax. These include agents such as MDM2 inhibitors, immune therapies, monoclonal antibodies, and in fact, a number of triplet combinations looking at these are now being moved into clinical trials. Based on the exciting data of the azacitidine venetoclax, the company AbbVie and Genentech have filed with the FDA, and the filing is currently under review. We actually hope that by the end of this year, the combination will become approved and will be a standard of care for all elderly AML patients, especially those who are not fit for intensive chemotherapy. So for the community physicians in the audience, I think it's going to be very important to keep an eye on this developing space. And once this combination is approved, I strongly believe that this should be the combination that should be used in the frontline setting, no longer using single agent azacitidine or decitabine, but using the azacitidine venetoclax combination. The other major changes that we have seen are the development of targeted therapies, and there are two particular mutations for which targeted therapies have moved forward very rapidly, and these are the IDH1 and 2 mutations and the FLT3 mutations. So there are two drugs that are being evaluated in the relapsed FLT3 mutated acute myeloid leukemia space, and these two drugs are quizartinib and gilteritinib. And both of these drugs are second generation FLT3 inhibitors, both of them in large phase 2 studies with more than 200 patients have shown very high activity, producing bone marrow response and remission rates of 50% or more. And this is quite striking when you think about the fact that these are single oral agents and can produce up to 50% responses in a relapsed acute myeloid leukemia patient. So both of these agents, quizartinib and gilteritinib, have been evaluated in phase 3 trials. The phase 3 trials for both are completed. And in fact, at the recent meeting, the quizartinib data, phase 3 data was updated, and it was shown that the phase 3 trial was positive with an improvement in overall survival. So the design of this study was we took patients who had first salvage AML and had a FLT3 ITD mutation, and then patients were randomized in a blinded fashion in this phase 3 study to receive either single agent second generation FLT3 inhibitor quizartinib or investigator choice chemotherapy. And the investigator choice chemotherapy could be either low-dose cytarabine, mitoxantrone etoposide cytarabine, or FLAG-IDA. So basically, the idea was to see if a single agent oral FLT3 inhibitor could produce equal better response rates or better survival than combination high-dose chemotherapy. And the quizartinib indeed did show that there was an improvement in overall survival at 28 weeks as compared to 21 weeks with the standard chemotherapy. What was also interesting was that the response rates with quizartinib were quite maintained and similar to what was seen in the phase 2 study, where the overall marrow remission rates were about 50% in the phase 3 study as compared to 25% for patients who were getting the investigator choice chemotherapy. And about double the patients, 25 to 30% of the patients on the quizartinib arm could be bridged to stem cell transplant, whereas only 10 to 11% of patients who got the investigational chemotherapy could be bridged to stem cell transplant. So basically, this data showed that the quizartinib as a single agent in relapsed FLT3 ITD AML was a very good choice. It showed better response rates as well as improved survival compared to high-dose chemotherapy, and more patients could be bridged to transplant, which eventually is the goal in all FLT3 mutated AML patients. And based on this, the company has applied to the FDA, and we expect that quizartinib will be approved and should be a standard of care in relapsed FLT3 ITD mutated patients, hopefully by the end of this year, early next year. The other agent in this space is gilteritinib, which again is a second generation FLT3 inhibitor, also very potent, seems to have almost exactly the same marrow remission rates as a single agent to quizartinib of about 50%. One of the plus points with gilteritinib is that it covers both the FLT3 ITD, which is the more common FLT3 mutation, but also the FLT3 D835, which is less common, but can be a mechanism of resistance in about 25 to 30% of patients who become resistant to FLT3 inhibitors. And a phase 3 study of the gilteritinib versus investigator choice, almost exactly the same design as the previous quizartinib study, has been completed. We don't have the top line results released yet, but we do know that the company has filed with the FDA, so we assume there must be some positive data. And I think both quizartinib and gilteritinib will become available for salvage FLT3 ITD mutated patients in the next 6 months. So this is going to be a very good situation where we're going to have not one, but two very active second generation FLT3 inhibitor, whereas compared to in the past, we had actually no drugs in this space. So I think it's going to be very critical now to start figuring out how to sequence these agents, how to build combinations with these agents, because although the marrow remission rates are up to 50%, we do know that the duration of response is unfortunately short, with both quizartinib and gilteritinib lasting anywhere between 14 to 20 weeks. So if we can get a patient to stem cell transplant in that duration, if he's a healthy young patient, has a good donor, financial clearance, then this is very meaningful. On the other hand, if we cannot get them to stem cell transplant quickly, then the duration of response, 14 to 20 weeks, is clinically not as meaningful. And so we need to start building combinations, and a number of trials looking at combinations of azacitidine or decitabine with quizartinib or gilteritinib as well as chemotherapy with quizartinib or gilteritinib, as well as new agents such as venetoclax and MDM2 inhibitors with quizartinib, gilteritinib are now moving forward. And based on a lot of preclinical data, we think that these may further improve the outcomes. But for the community doctors at this time, I think the key is going to be to keep an eye on the approvals for quizartinib and gilteritinib, and most importantly, to check FLT3 ITD, both at diagnosis, because as we know, last year, there was a FLT3 inhibitor, midostaurin, that was approved to be used in combination with induction chemotherapy for newly diagnosed AML at diagnosis. So FLT3 ITD and DA35 checking at diagnosis is a standard of care and should be done for all AML patients. But now, more importantly, I think we also need to start checking for FLT3, both ITD and DA35 at relapse, because we do know that there are some patients who may have the FLT3 ITD DA35 at diagnosis, but they may lose it at relapse. And more importantly, vice versa, there may be some patients who do not have a FLT3 ITD DA35 at diagnosis, and they may acquire it at relapse and then become eligible to receive either quizartinib or gilteritinib, which would be much better choices than giving them high-dose chemotherapy such as FLAG-IDA or MEC. And so this should now be considered as a standard to check FLT3 mutational testing on the bone marrow at diagnosis and at each relapse for acute myeloid leukemia patients, because now this is actionable with standard agents becoming available very soon. The next group of targeted therapies that was not discussed much at ASCO, but I think is of importance for the community physicians and has been discussed at EHA, which is another meeting that happens soon after ASCO, are the IDH inhibitors. So I won't go into much detail, but briefly, we do have drugs now that, like the FLT3, can target patients who have an IDH1 or IDH2 mutation. This makes up about 15 to 20% of acute myeloid leukemia. So it's a little bit less common than FLT3, which is seen in about 35% of all acute myeloid leukemia patients. But it is an important target. And both the IDH1 inhibitor as well as the IDH2 inhibitor are now available. The IDH1 inhibitor should be available very soon on the commercial market. So we are routinely checking all our patients at relapse, especially for IDH mutations. And if they happen to have either an IDH2 mutation or an IDH1 mutation, we would prefer to give them treatment with an IDH inhibitor. These have shown response rates of about 35 to 40%, so slightly lower than the FLT3 inhibitors, quizartinib, gilteritinib. But again, are very, very safe agents, very well tolerated oral pills, can be given at home. And a number of these responses are, in fact, quite durable. So I think that if I do have an IDH mutated relapse patient, my preference would be to go for an IDH1 or 2 inhibitor rather than standard chemotherapy. These are the targeted agents that are now available, should be considered. But now we're going to move a little bit away and talk a little bit about the immunotherapies, which are a new group of therapies, just like in solid tumors and lymphomas, becoming more and more important in the therapy of acute myeloid leukemia. And when we talk about immunotherapies, I think there are two major immunotherapy approaches we need to think about. One of these are called antibody drug conjugates. So these are antibodies that are targeted towards leukemia-specific antigens. And in AML, those leukemia-specific antigens are usually CD33, CD123, CLL1, TIM3. And usually they're bound to a toxic payload, either a bacterial or a chemical toxin. And the idea is to direct this toxic payload into the leukemia mature blast in a preferential manner, resulting in death of the leukemia cells. And there is actually one antibody drug conjugate that is already approved in the United States. This is an agent called gemtuzumab or Mylotar. And this agent is recommended to be used in combination with induction chemotherapy, especially in patients with acute myeloid leukemia who have favorable cytogenetics. And this includes core binding factor cytogenetics such as inversion 16 and 821, but also has shown to improve survival in patients who have intermediate cytogenetics AML. So at MD Anderson, if we have a new AML, we check them to see if they have core binding factor, inversion 16, translocation 8, 21 cytogenetics, or if they have intermediate cytogenetics, and we would offer that patient the addition of the gemtuzumab, the standard induction chemotherapy. Now, we would not do that for people who have adverse cytogenetics like deletion 7, deletion 5, deletion 17, or complex karyotype, because the benefit was not shown by adding the gemtuzumab in that group of patients. So I think in addition to checking for FLT3 that we talked about, IDH1 and 2 that we talked about, it's also important for checking the inversion 16, translocation 821, and general cytogenetics of the patient, because now we're really getting to personalized therapy where we could offer different targeted immune therapies to patients based on their cytogenetic or molecular profile. In addition to the antibody drug conjugates, there is another group of immunotherapies that depends on harnessing your own T cells, and these are called T cell activating therapies, and these include three different modalities: immune checkpoint-based therapies, bispecific antibodies, and CAR T cells. And at this year's ASCO meeting, there was data showing that if you looked at acute myeloid leukemia patients, both in the bone marrow and peripheral blood, there was a well-preserved T cell population. And in fact, the T cell population seemed to show an activated phenotype, meaning that the T cells in the bone marrow of patients with acute myeloid leukemia were actually trying to fight against the leukemia. They expressed high numbers of CD8, OX40, HLA-DR, CD69. These are known markers of activation. So this led to the hypothesis that, similar to solid tumors, where we see a activated T cell infiltrate and immune checkpoint therapies have shown activity, there may be a role for these agents in acute myeloid leukemia. And one of the studies presented by Dr. Kadia, one of my colleagues, was looking at maintenance with the PD-1 inhibitor nivolumab in patients with acute myeloid leukemia who had completed their planned induction consolidation, usually with IRC-based therapies, and there were not candidates for stem cell transplant. And we were able to show that by adding nivolumab as a maintenance — now this is a small phase 2 study, so not to be considered standard of care, but based on the data that we had in 20 patients, we saw that we were able to improve the event-free survival and overall survival, especially in patients who have adverse features such as high-risk cytogenetics, bad molecular phenotypes such as TP53, secondary AML. And in those patients, the addition of the nivolumab maintenance for 1 year period, as we did in our trial, improved event-free survival to 65% and the overall survival to 80% at 1.5 year. So we'll continue to follow these patients, but it does seem that there may be a role for these immune checkpoint agents. Now, others have previously presented and published that combinations of hypomethylating agents such as azacitidine with PD-1 inhibitors also seems to be very active, especially in relapsed AML and in early salvage patients such as salvage 1, salvage 2. These are able to produce response rates of 30-40% and a median overall survival of 10 months or higher, which is very encouraging when we compare it to historical outcomes in salvage 1 and 2 patients. So now there are a number of studies, including a randomized phase 2 study looking at nivolumab maintenance in patients who have completed induction consolidation, as well as a large phase 3 SWOG cooperative group study looking at combination of frontline therapy of azacitidine, nivolumab versus azacitidine in newly diagnosed elderly AML not fit for intensive chemo. In addition to this, there are about 25-30 smaller studies ongoing looking at different immune checkpoint-based therapies, as well as double immune checkpoints such as PD-1 CTLA-4 inhibitors in both relapsed and frontline acute myeloid leukemia. So I think that, as you can see, there's a lot of developments. There were 4 drugs approved last year for acute myeloid leukemia. These included FLT3 inhibitor midostaurin, IDH inhibitor inositinib, as well as gemtuzumab, which is a CD33 antibody drug conjugate, and Vyxeos, which is a fixed dose formulation of cytarabine and idarubicin. And now this year already, we are looking at 3 to 4 potential drugs that may become available by the end of this year, early 2019. These include the 2 FLT3 inhibitors, quizartinib and gilteritinib, as well as venetoclax in combination with azacitidine for frontline elderly acute myeloid leukemia, as well as the IDH1 inhibitor, which is also being reviewed by the FDA. So in a span of 2 years, we're going to have potentially 8 new drugs, and this is major breakthrough in development for acute myeloid leukemia. I would also encourage you to look at the other abstracts that have been covered in more detail by my colleagues from the ASCO 2018. A number of these cover topics that I alluded to, such as FLT3 inhibitors, venetoclax, immune checkpoint-based therapy, and they have more in-depth discussion of specific abstracts. And I thank you very much for listening, and I wish you a good day.